Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban.
Today we are analyzing the cannabis consumer market with founder of Fortis Consulting, Lara Fortis. Lara, thank you for being here with us this evening.
My pleasure.
And if you would, before we get into this conversation about the cannabis consumer market and cannabis consumers, give us your background working for different market research firms and how you ultimately started this consulting firm.
Absolutely. I've been in market research, going on 24 years. Most of my time has been spent in the consumer packaged goods space with Fortune 500 companies through my role at various agencies, mostly in California. I worked for companies that were umbrella companies for large market research firms that did qualitative and quantitative, and also some boutique market research firms as head of research and operations. I got into forming my own business about 7 years ago, and the reason being is that I felt that market research shouldn't be the purview of only Fortune 500 companies. It should be accessible to everybody, all sizes of businesses and organizations. So 7 years ago, this last month, I decided to go out on my own. And I have done everything from multicultural research to focusing on charter schools to peanut butter to cannabis. And I found myself in the cannabis space starting in 2018 and really loved it. So even though it's not my 100% sole business, it's really my favorite vertical to be in because it presents so much opportunity. And I really like the vice economy, and I like working in subjects that are a bit controversial, a bit edgy. And so I've found myself there, and with a particular emphasis on the role of bud tenders in the cannabis industry.
Well, so again, thank you for joining us. Let's talk about that term for a moment, because it's something that we are all used to, right? The folks that operate in a licensed marijuana dispensary or a marijuana center here in Colorado, or in any dispensary type setting across the country. The folks that are on the other side of the counter, the folks that help you select products, the folks that help you provide their mostly experiential insight into what a product will make you feel or how it will impact you. These folks are called bud tenders. I think that's pretty common within the industry, but we've got a lot of listeners outside of the industry. So it's important to define that term. Laura, bud tenders are what? What are they? What are they? What do they represent in terms of the entry to the commercial experience from a purchaser of cannabis?
Well, unlike a lot of other categories where the retail associate may be an influencer, but not a major one, in the case of bud tenders at dispensaries, they're typically the ones who are making the recommendations to the end user. So someone may come in, they may be a regular, they may be a first-time consumer, they may be dipping their toe into the category, and they come and they ask the bud tender, what do you recommend? And typically there'll be a series of questions. What have you tried before? What effect are you going for? A series of questions to ascertain what the right product for the consumer is. And as you pointed out, a lot of it is based on firsthand experience. In fact, in doing a lot of research with bud tenders, three of the major factors that contribute to a bud tender's willingness to recommend a product are that they had samples so that they experienced it firsthand, that they had education, ample education about the product, and a lot of times it's swag. You'd be surprised the role of beanies or a tie-dyed T-shirt and really making an impression on a bud tender, which sounds kind of crazy. It was to me. But certainly the bud tenders are, they can play the role of an ambassador, or they can be a detractor. And so the reason that it's so important to understand bud tenders is that they are probably, I think the statistic is 68% of the time, the choice that a consumer makes is based on a bud tender recommendation. So it's very high, you know, essentially, you know, two-thirds of the purchases are influenced by a bud tender recommendation. And so cannabis companies are getting wise to the fact that they don't only need to understand their end consumers, but they need to understand how the bud tenders like their product and the messaging.
No, it's very well said. Bud tenders play a number of roles. The role you've described, as you say, is as a gatekeeper. But don't bud tenders almost play a role as an MD or a doctor with so many people that use over-the-counter cannabis, whether that's in smokable form, edible form, oil form, or otherwise? They use it for medicinal purposes, and we've seen that was certainly the momentum prior to our adult use regimes across the country. And I think about this, my personal experience in searching for a particular cannabis therapeutic for someone who suffered from severe ADHD. And I went out and talked to these researchers and physicians on the phone and said, you know, for this particular individual, what do you recommend? And the doctors, they knew that the cannabinoids found in what they used were effective, but they could not tell you, go buy this product or go buy that product or go buy this strain or particular marijuana variety. So I said, well, how do I describe what I'm looking for to the bud tender, to the person at the store? So in that exchange, when I went into the marijuana dispensary and I interacted with the bud tender, I said, look, this is what I'm looking for. The docs told me that scientifically this will work or should work for that person. And then it was them translating science into a purchaser's behavior. Can you comment a little bit on that? Because there seems to be a hole in our system if we're relying on bud tenders for what is, in effect, medical advice. But that is our system, for lack of a better way to describe it right now. What's your experience in that regard?
Well, that's a good point. Most of my work, in fact, all of my work is on the recreational marijuana side. On the medical marijuana side, there tends to be more of a role in being educated about the medical implications and contraindications of using marijuana. And they take on various titles that are more elevated than bud tenders per se. But on the recreational side, to your point, you are relying on bud tenders who have varying degrees of education about the plant and its medicinal uses to provide that input. Oftentimes, there's a kind of myopia about dividing it into indica or sativa, for instance, but bud tenders, at least the ones that I've spoken to, are surprisingly aware of the nuances of different strains of flower and the effect that they're going to have. I've never spoken to anyone particularly about ADD or ADHD or the role of using that. It tends to be that they're very familiar with effect in terms of, are you trying to go for a in the couch effect? Are you trying to experience an elevated high? Are you trying to be focused? Are you trying to be compressed? And so I think that there's opportunity for bud tenders to get better informed about the use of it for medical purposes, but I'm not sure legally about the nuances of how they can recommend for specific conditions.
Well, I want to come back to something you said a little bit earlier. I think you said something like 68% of people are influenced on what they're going to buy by the bud tender. And to footnote that point, and that might not be the exact number, but we know that it's high, and it's higher than other retailers. Uh-huh. You have to consider the fact that a lot of the people who go into recreational dispensaries may be from out of state. They are not familiar with these products. This could be their first experience ever being in a commercial marijuana environment. And so they are relying on this person to provide them with some background, some information, some recommendations on what the heck they are going to buy. And I almost wonder, when you look at bud tenders, either recreational or medical, if their position is almost that of a pharmacist. If you look at just how to compare them to another similar position, it does almost seem like it is the job of a pharmacist rather than other retail associates. So just interested in your thoughts on that briefly, and then we can jump over to just talking more in general about the other market research that you've done.
Sure. I think you're right. Though people are loath to admit it, they are very much serving the role of a pharmacist, as if you're going into some place and you have a problem and you want a solution to the problem. In this case, the problem may be something like ADD, or the problem may be something like I'm stuck inside with my family for 90 days in a row and I need stress relief. So it can be an array of problems that a bud tender is intended to solve. And unlike a tobacco store or an alcohol, a liquor store, you don't typically go in and ask about the effect you're trying to achieve. You're just focused on taste or, some other thing. Whereas bud tenders, there's a lot at stake because it's very easy, especially with edibles, which is an entry point for a lot of new to category users and new to marijuana users or boomerangs from college. They can be definitely a breeding ground for having a bad experience if the bud tender doesn't manage their expectations about what effects they may have. And certainly everyone processes cannabis differently. Their cannabinoid systems are different. But I've heard lots of horror stories of people having bad experiences with edibles, especially because bud tenders didn't lay out the timetable and the dosing that is recommended when you're new to a particular product.
So when you buy a product in a dispensary, you mentioned these terms previously, indica and sativa. And those things, while not technically accurate as it relates to the plant material, describe an experience. And most of the folks that have ever been to a store or within the industry understand that. But for our listeners, can you just describe what those two terms have come to mean and now how that affects consumer behavior?
Sure, I can talk to that a little bit. And I want to caveat by saying that I think personally that it's misguided to label things in that sort of conventional indica, which is more like a relaxing or sedative effect, or sativa, which is more what people think of as a high and in the traditional sense, an exciting experience. And so people will come in with the assumption that they're going to do one or the other or get a hybrid. But there's so much to learn, so much for me and everybody else to learn about the nuances of it. So there's a lot of controversy around it, and I think increasingly people are moving away from seeing things in that either-or category of looking at cannabis and what they choose. But as a newcomer, that tends to be what people are assuming they're doing, indica or sativa or a hybrid. But there are stores, there are dispensaries that are finding different ways to categorize things like focus, settle, relax, to try to get away from that thinking.
Well, it's a difficult product in some ways to really categorize. And it is the comparison you draw between alcohol, I think, is fascinating. I've always just personally thought this is an interesting topic. Not sure that it's been really studied to see if there are different effects from drinking a spirit versus drinking a beer. That's a topic for another time, but do want to just in general applaud the work that you're doing, because I think in general market research has been kind of a hurdle for the industry at large. It's something that kind of lagged behind the development of the industry. And you talked at the beginning about your experience working with Fortune 500 companies. And it does seem that in order to get the big guys involved and really get their attention on the cannabis industry, you need market research. This is a huge component that's going to drive their interest. And maybe you could speak a little bit to that, particularly with the experience you've had working in other categories. Maybe you could even give us a peek at, you know, what you've seen as far as the interest from Fortune 500s getting their toe in the water with cannabis.
Well, I'm not sure that a Fortune 500 company will ever get their toe in with cannabis, because they tend to be national companies. So by law, they, you know, unless cannabis was legal federally, they probably couldn't, you know, touch it, so to speak. But what's interesting to me about Fortune 500 research is that they're very savvy about market research as a tool for optimizing their marketing and their product development. So to use like the Stephen Covey's 7 Habits of Successful People, and I like to take clients through an exercise where we begin with the end in mind. And the end in mind is usually to increase profits and revenues and market share. And marketing is a tool by which to do that. And I think of market research as sharpening the saw of that tool. It's easy for someone who doesn't have the savvy of a Fortune 500 company to come in and just figure, we'll push marketing, we'll push sales, and we'll see what sticks. And hopefully at the end of the year, when we look at our P&L sheet, marketing is an investment rather than an expense. What I believe is that market research serves the role of making sure that marketing is a investment rather than an expense, because it optimizes it. So in terms of the research that I do, it can be everything from product optimization, you know, the typical taste test and in-home use test, to the messaging and the brand essence work, providing input to that, to marketing and point of sales materials. One of the things that I think is most important about market research for the cannabis space and for other businesses as well is understanding the potential of your target market and your optimal end user or consumer. So I've had two projects in the last, I'd say, 3 or 4 months. One was for a device that was designed to help people who don't know how to roll their own joint. So the spirit in which it was created was for people who have dexterity problems, are older, want the old school experience of having a joint but don't remember or are not unable to roll a joint. So that was going to be the way in which the marketing went for that product. Turns out that it's people who smoke a lot of joints and just want a more efficient way to do it that is the optimal market for that particular product that's hopefully going to come to fruition in 2020 or early 2021. So it changes the way that they look at their marketing and branding and everything else, because it's not going to be just for older or frail people. It's going to be with a medical application. It's going to be for people who are heavy pot users. Same thing with another product that was designed for connoisseurs to store their weed so that it doesn't get stale quickly. We really thought that it would be for premium kind of people who are snobby about their cannabis. But when we tested it, it turns out it's parents who don't want their kids to know that they've got weed in the house are really the biggest potential market for this product. And again, totally different marketing to connoisseurs than marketing to parents who smoke weed and don't want their kids to know about it. So I think that where a lot of companies go wrong, especially startups and small companies, is that the owners or founders believe one thing based on their set of assumptions going into it, but the opportunity is much greater than they realized or different than they realized, if only they understood their target audience and the message that's going to be a call to action for them.
You mentioned the word branding or brands a moment ago, and I'd love to dive into that just a little bit, because I just want to get your reaction to this statement. And this is something I've heard from dozens of my clients. I don't necessarily believe that it's true, but here's the statement.
Okay.
Branding does not work in the marijuana industry because people don't buy products, they buy experiences, and the products are too varied, too inconsistent, too establish appropriate brands. What's your reaction to that? And what do consumers buy in this industry?
Well, that is, I think, an idealized version of what's out there. I think that we all, as human beings, want to believe that we're buying something regardless of the branding or the logo or the, reputation of something. And it would be nice to be able to say, like, to treat cannabis like a commodity where you're buying something expecting a very concrete effect, and that the packaging and that the branding doesn't matter. In my experience, packaging and branding matters very much, even in the cannabis space. And a brand essence can be about an experience that's delivered. There's nothing to say that that feeling that you're delivering an experience or an effect can't be branded. Now, from a legal point of view and an intellectual property point of view, I don't think you can do it. But in terms of branding as it's known, meaning the logo, the essence, what it represents, that all I think is very relevant. So I think it would be misguided for any company, but that's more so for a consumables company like a cannabis company, to not think about their branding and what they represent. And to have that buttoned up from everything from their mission statement to their values to their website to their marketing, that there should be some consistency and brand essence to that.
Well, so let's take a little bit of a turn here and talk a little bit about hemp products. And what we've seen is that there are larger manufacturers, maybe not Fortune 500 companies per se, but larger manufacturers that have entered into that space either through their core entity or through various subdivisions, and they've had to evaluate the distribution of products. So what we've seen, for example, is, of course, CBD has been the rage from a consumer perspective for several years now, and that seems to have lightened up a little bit. But as large companies try to evaluate whether they want to put CBD or enriched levels of cannabinoids into their products, there's, of course, the legal and regulatory issue, which causes some pause. But what I've heard from several of these companies and is that consumers just want hemp. They don't understand exactly what CBD is, or frankly, that it comes from hemp in terms of over-the-counter products, that consumers just want hemp. I don't know that to be true, but it seems like when you balance the legal issues and that notion, it's demonstrated in the marketplace when you look at what's on the shelf in pharmaceutical or pharmacies is, topicals, soaps, lotions with hemp seed oil, not cannabinoids or CBD. Colgate's recent hemp toothpaste does not contain cannabinoids. It contains hemp seed oil. If you look at New Belgium Brewery's Hemperer beer, it doesn't contain cannabinoids. It just contains hemp seed oil. What is your understanding of what consumers know or want as it relates to hemp or CBD? Because I think it's an imperfect science, and it's especially imperfect considering that large companies with major distribution channels are putting things other than CBD in their products, hoping to gain market share versus cannabinoids themselves. What are your thoughts on some, any, or all of that?
Well, I can share my thoughts, but I do have to caveat it by the fact that most of my work is in the recreational marijuana and CBD space. So I'm not as savvy when it comes to other forms of hemp. That being said, when I see something on a label that says organically farmed hemp, because I'm someone who's cynical and questioning, I always ask myself, well, to what degree does that improve the product, let alone my experience with the product? I kind of have a sense that it's a bit of hype that hemp has become a proxy for inferring something's natural or modern in its approach to, in its approach to delivering a product. I'm probably cutting myself off from potential hemp clients, but I don't get it yet. I don't understand why it's getting the notoriety that it does, because I haven't been able to pinpoint the compelling benefits for me to make it a priority personally. Like you said, when some of the Fortune 500 companies include hemp, I don't know. Is that improving it? Is it improving their market share? I think for some that might be a disconnect, like in the case of...
That's really good insight.
Colgate.
Well, we appreciate you sharing your personal opinion, not just your professional opinion here on the Hoban Minute with us. It does bring to mind, just a real quick aside, is that PetSmart was hit with a couple of lawsuits, and the product that they were selling had hemp seed oil in it. But some of the language on the packaging may have indicated that it had cannabinoids in it. And then the lawsuits came as a result of people who bought this product being like, well, this didn't do what you said it was going to do. Is it hemp? Is it CBD? Are they saying hemp because they think that that's going to make the consumer think it's CBD? It's complicated. And this is why we need more market research and more people like yourself doing this excellent work. We thank you so much for coming on here and talking about all this with us. Really interesting conversation about bud tenders. Everybody in our little circle has had some personal experiences, and it's fun to talk about them. So thank you so much for joining us on the Hoban Minute this evening.
You're very welcome. I'm honored to be a part of it. And if you have any questions that you need me to do a little research on afterwards, because they've raised questions for which you don't have answers, don't hesitate to reach out.
We will not. Take care. You have a great night.
Thank you. Good night.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.